Federal funding was pulled this summer, and WBEZ is facing a $1.4 million shortfall. Your support makes a difference, enabling us to be fully financially strong, funded 100% by our community. From lead pipe investigations to reporting on ICE in Chicago neighborhoods, you ensure the city's journalism stays strong, independent, and growing. So step up now. Become a monthly donor at wbez.org/donate and keep Chicago's newsroom at full strength.
This morning, more troops are on the ground in American cities.
The Texas National Guard has arrived in Chicago.
There is no invasion here. There is no insurrection here.
If you look at Chicago, Chicago's a great city where there's a lot of crime.
The federal government is out of control. This is one of the most dangerous times in our nation's history.
Mayor Brandon Johnson is back and ready to answer Chicago's questions. This is In the Loop. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Once a month, Chicago's chief executive, Mayor Brandon Johnson, stops by the WBEZ studios to answer your questions. Today, we talked about everything from ICE activity in the city to the government shutdown to the upcoming city budget. We started off by getting Mayor Johnson's reaction to the Texas National Guard at a military training facility in the southwest suburbs. Here's Mayor Johnson.
I'm going to remain firm and committed in protecting and defending the city of Chicago and really defending our democracy and our Constitution. You know, what the president is doing is absolutely illegal, unconstitutional, and dangerous. These individuals that, you know, sign up to serve and protect our democracy, they don't do it with the ideal of being deployed into the very communities that raised them. And, you know, our position is firm and clear.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I think it's an important note that the training, quote unquote, that they're receiving is not equivalent to the training that our local law enforcement receives. These individuals, troops, the National Guard, they do not have any policing powers. They do not have any arresting powers. This is not about immigration. This is not about safety. This is about the President of the United States of America executing his authoritarianism and looking to foment chaos and fear.
So when you think about that, the fact that they're here, you talk about their training being different. That means it sounds like we might be in some sort of danger. And you talk about defending residents and community members. What would that mean in your toolbook?
Well, I mean, in terms of the danger, I mean, we're already experiencing that, right? There are federal agents that are shooting people, right? In one instance, a father was killed.
So where do you step in and what can you do?
Releasing tear gas in communities, right, where people are walking to school and walking to work, releasing tear gas on our own police officers, right, where over two dozen police officers were affected by this. Here's what we've done. Three sweeping executive orders,
mm-hmm.
right? The latest one is to make sure that our public spaces that are city-owned property are not being used for disappearing families, not being used to load weapons. I'm going to use every single tool that's in my toolbox, and that includes the courts. But the part that I believe is important in this moment is that it's not going to be just one individual. It's the folks on the ground, the rapid response volunteers who are organizing within our communities to strengthen and find more ways to protect our communities. Look, Sasha, this is unprecedented. I mean, I know people are looking for direct answers, but this is unprecedented. We've never had a mayor have to deal with a president declaring war on its city.
So you've implemented by executive order these ICE-free zones, as you just described, right? And so the city and state, when we look at what's happened so far, it seems like the city and state have found it nearly impossible to actually control the federal actions that are happening here in the city, right? When we think of the South Shore raid, for instance, or what you brought up, the tear gas being thrown in Logan Square or Brighton Park, how do you intend to enforce these ICE-free zones? Because my thinking is if ICE does comply with this executive order and they don't use city-owned parking lots or property as staging areas or processing locations, won't they just set up somewhere else next door?
They will.
And then what?
Well, as I said, these are unprecedented times. How about this? Here's another potential question. What happens when our framers established the Constitution to ensure that there are checks and balances, and that doesn't happen? I can tell you what happens when that doesn't happen is that you have a president who is absolutely out of control, a president who is literally trampling on our Constitution, right? A president who has declared war on poor people. I mean, he's literally declared war on the city of Chicago. And so what I'm simply offering is a pathway to resistance, right? I mean, you've described a scene that unfortunately, it's not the first time we've seen something like this in America, where you had Black Hawk helicopters hovering over apartments in Black communities.
You're talking about the South Shore raid.
The South Shore raid, right? But we've also seen law enforcement execute a raid that led to the death of Mark Clark and Chairman Fred Hampton Sr., right? And so, look, just because we're right doesn't mean that this is going to be an automatic victory. And so when you ask me about accountability, I'm going to use every single tool that's available to me. So if they break the law, we'll take them to court. If they step outside of the Constitution, then we'll find other ways in which we can push back against this tyrant. Now, look, I know there are some people who are just waiting around, looking around, sitting on their hands, feeling defeated. What do we do? And if we don't do that, but what if we do this and they don't do that? Mm-hmm. Listen, as mayor of the city of Chicago, I do not have time to sit and wait for hypotheticals.
Right. As the mayor, we're also looking to you for answers.
And
this
is, and here's the answer. We as a collective have to stand up and push back against a tyrant. This is not the responsibility of one individual. You literally have a president of the United States of America that is declaring war on American cities. And so I can tell you this. I don't know any other mayors that are setting up executive orders. I don't know any other mayors that are working with the community to make sure that we're protecting and defending people's basic human rights. And so is there more work to be done? When necessary, we will do whatever it takes.
Let's hear from a caller, Mayor Johnson. Alex has been waiting in Albany Park. Hi, Alex. What's your question for the mayor?
Hi, Mayor Johnson. Speaking to the Logan Square incident, what was really striking about it was that it was seemingly unprovoked, unrelated to any kind of enforcement action, just middle of the day random violence. Is the city able to open an investigation into that agent or even make a direct arrest for, you know, what appears to be criminal conduct?
It is criminal.
What are you doing to directly keep random people safe from this?
Yeah, this is criminal. And I've called it that. And yes, I'm calling for investigations, right? Whether it's the investigation into what you just described, the investigation into the raid in South Shore, the investigation of a shooting of a resident of this city. And again, though we are working through unprecedented times, I'm going to use every single tool that's available to me to defend and protect all of Chicago.
President Trump said on social media this morning, you and Governor Pritzker, quote, should be in jail for failing to protect ICE officers. That was his quote, I think, on Truth Social. What's your response?
The president is unstable. We know that. He's a double-minded man, and he is obviously very simple-minded. And it's certainly not the first time that Trump has called for a black man to be arrested. Not the first time. Look, I have a responsibility to defend Chicago, and that's what I'm going to do.
Chicago had the least violent summer since the 1960s this year. And one argument that Trump has made, of course, for sending National Guard troops here in the first place is that Chicago is seeing an increase in violence. We know that couldn't be further from the truth, Mayor Johnson. But given that, I want to hear more about your reaction when a federal judge Monday didn't immediately put a stop to President Trump's plan to send the troops in.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, let me just say, as much, though there is more work to be done, I am grateful that we have come together as a city to build the safest, most affordable big city in America, right? And the fewest amount of homicides in the summer since 1965 is a marker. And it's not the end goal, but it is certainly getting us closer to our goal. And one homicide, one shooting, one act of violence is one too many. And as we have worked hard to make critical investments in our city to ensure that we drive violence down in our beloved city, this president is obviously out of touch with the work that we are doing. And in fact, it was the president that took $800 million out of the budget that went towards violence prevention. It was the president of the United States of America that defunded law enforcement by cutting the ATF budget by 30%, over 1,400 positions that he cut. And, you know, as far as, you know, the judge, I know this, the judge here had a few questions that that they want answered. And the federal government received a 48-hour time frame to be able to answer those questions. Mm-hmm. I don't believe they're going to be able to do that. What I'm looking to is the fact that in the state of Oregon, a judge held their position twice now, saying that what the Trump administration is doing, which we all do know this, is unconstitutional and it's illegal.
Yeah.
My hope and my expectation is that the judge here in Illinois follow suit with what other judges across the country have already declared.
There's a hearing tomorrow on the question of whether National Guard can be deployed. We know, though, that troops are already here from Texas. So what can be accomplished tomorrow?
Well, what could be accomplished is that this, you know, judge could follow suit with what judges have said across this country.
And send them
California
back?
And in Oregon is to deem it unconstitutional. And therefore, then, they do not have the right for the president to federalize a National Guard in another state and then send them to a different state, right? I mean, so that's what can be accomplished tomorrow. And I hope that this judge recognizes that in this moment, you either support the Constitution or you do not.
Let's hear from another caller. Here's Max in Oak Park. Hey, Max, what's your question?
Yeah, good morning. I'm curious what the mayor and his staff are doing to coordinate with business leaders in the city, as well as elected officials on the other side of the aisle, other mayors, state and federal representatives to respond to this this brazen action from the federal government.
Thank you, Max.
Yeah, Max, thank you for that question. Well, a couple of things. One, you know, me, the board president, and the governor, we're all on the same page. Our congressional delegation, state reps, state senators, alder people, we're all in lockstep here. There are, you know, county commissioners and school board members that are all very clear that we have to remain firm and protect our city, our county, and our state. And that includes, obviously, all of our villages, towns, municipalities. Mm. And there's been strong coordination between my office, the board president, and the governor's office to ensure that we're all singing from the same hymn book. And as far as the business community is concerned, I'm not sure if the caller saw this, but all of the major business consortiums have all come together and have said emphatically that they oppose the occupation of American cities by the military. The Civic Committee, you had the Chicago Chamber of Commerce, the Illinois Restaurants Association. I mean, all of us are in lockstep in the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois. This is why I believe we've been able to hold firm, right? It doesn't mean that we have not experienced levels of terror and anxiety. But to the extent in which this president wants to unleash his privatized, militarized ICE entity, mm-hmm. that we've been able to push back significantly. You asked earlier, people want to know what the mayor's doing. And I've literally been on the airwaves and in the communities for some time, working with community organizations, moving and signing executive orders, taking the Trump administration to court. In fact, every single lawsuit that he has filed against us, we've prevailed. And lawsuits that we have filed in the affirmative, we've prevailed.
And you think that unified messaging among, you know, the business consortium and the politicians, that's all been beneficial?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you know, you have business leaders who are also, you know, expressing the fact that violent crime is going down in the city of Chicago. The city of Chicago was voted the best big city in America by Condé Nast 9 years in a row now.
Yes.
We had some of the largest economic activity in our downtown corridors where You know, $3.5 million hotel bookings, $900 million in revenue, over $20 billion of full economic impact because of tourism. Our airports set and broke records seven times in the summer.
Yet that is not the picture that is sent across the country.
Well, yes, it is.
About Chicago.
It is being sent around the country. The president does not speak for the entire country right now. Clearly, he doesn't. And so what the president is attempting to do is undermine the message that people know. Because if the message wasn't getting around the country, how are we the best big city in America 9 years in a row? Somebody around the country said, well, Mr. President, you're wrong because we've been there. The fact that we have more people coming through our airports, the fact that ridership is up in our public transportation system, we have people who actually are booking hotels. We have one of the greatest events that's about to take place this weekend. You know, the Chicago Marathon, where we know that at least 3,000 individuals from the country of Mexico have signed up. What does that say to me? There's a whole lot of people out there that know what I know, that the city of Chicago is the greatest freaking city in the world.
I was waiting for you to say that. Right on cue. All right. So on Capitol Hill yesterday, Attorney General Pam Bondi said that FBI Director Kash Patel is heading to Chicago.
National Guard is on the way right now as we speak. Oh, by the way, so is Director Patel and Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche. You're sitting here grilling me, and they're on their way to Chicago to keep your state safe.
So we're clear. What, if any, direct contact does your office or the Chicago Police Department have with the various federal agencies that are operating in Chicago? So like ICE, Border Patrol, now FBI, mm-hmm. National Guard even. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in this instance, the communications have broken down, right? Here's what's disappointing. Our local police department has worked with federal agents to solve crime, to get illegal guns off the streets of Chicago, to break up, you know, gang activity. We have done that before, right? Again, a few months ago, ATF and my local police department took over 170 high-power weapons off the streets of Chicago. Guns and weapons that have been trafficked from states that voted for Donald Trump, right? Mississippi and Indiana, Louisiana. And that level of coordination leads towards building safer communities. That coordination is not happening right now. Now, the superintendent of police, my superintendent, Larry Snelling, has had some conversations with Bovino, but very limited. They're not necessarily communicating in advance. They're not coordinating. It's more or less when they do something egregious, like you saw it over the weekend. You know, we've had the ability.
You mean when the Border Patrol agents do something egregious?
Yes. Like, so for instance, the releasing of tear gas and, you know, other egregious acts, you know, our superintendent has tried to intervene to help them understand how what they're doing is causing chaos. Otherwise, there has not been direct lines of communication.
Let's jump to the phones. Jean has been waiting in Rogers Park. Hi, Jean. Good morning. What's your question?
Good morning. So my question is, dear Mayor, do you think that it's a good idea to turn the surfaces in the city, such as bus stops, walls of the city-owned or state-owned buildings, into like artful messaging boards that could defeat the demonizing portrayal of our immigrants? What I mean is like hanging huge portraits of hardworking, beautiful, elderly teens, men and women that might have been arrested, detained, showing that they're not criminals, showing that they're not rapists or drug traffickers, but showing that they're helpers in our community, mothers and fathers and grandmothers and honor students and so on. This could contain their names, their professions, words that have been spoken about them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thoughtful comment there, Gene. Thank you.
Yeah.
What do you think about that, Mayor Johnson?
Well, first of all, everything that he said is absolutely true. Beautiful. Courageous. You know, the immigrant community, and particularly the Latino community, has contributed so much to the soul of Chicago. And I believe it's a really good idea for us to continue to highlight and find ways in which we can highlight the incredible work that so many people from, you know, our various, you know, Latine countries and communities have contributed to Chicago. In fact, you know, Gene, the vast majority of the individuals that have been arrested or detained do not have any criminal backgrounds whatsoever. In fact, the ones that have been deemed as, you know, criminal, we're talking about traffic offenses, I mean, misdemeanors, you know, so this is not about going after the so-called worst of the worst, right? Because that's just not, those numbers have not borne out. And, you know, I appreciate the creativity and the advice. Tonight we're celebrating at the Cultural Center, Latine Heritage Month or Hispanic Heritage Month, to do just that. And I do believe that there are opportunities for us to greater highlight the contributions of the Latino community.
Thinking more about what you said there and Gene's suggestion, I mean, in your opinion, I think it would be good to get this from you, Mayor Johnson. What should a protester or any Chicagoan do if they come across National Guardsmen on the street?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think the first thing that I want to note is that I have been incredibly grateful and impressed how we have handled our right to protest in this city and the way law enforcement has protected our fundamental rights, right? And the city of Chicago, I mean, I would argue, I mean, we are probably one of the cities that regularly engage in the First Amendment. And if an individual comes across, you know, a National Guards person, continue your day-to-day. I mean, these National Guards, what we've seen across the country, particularly in Washington, in D.C., they've been used as maintenance.
Like, what are they going to be doing? Just standing there?
Well, that's the question that the judge is asking the federal government to answer.
What exactly is the mission?
Exactly. And they have not
to
made
quote,
that clear.
Protect ICE facilities and ICE personnel. What does that mean? What does that look like?
Well, it sounds like you are thinking just like the judge, right? And as much as I would have hoped to have an immediate, you know, restraining order, this judge is challenging the Trump administration to answer those very basic fundamental questions because he has invoked this authority without the criteria that's needed in order to have this type of deployment. And because he hasn't answered, and this is probably the first judge to actually ask that. I'm not sure if that's the case, but we do know, at least in this case, that the judge has asked the federal government to be able to provide those basic answers. And they haven't done it. We'll see what happens tomorrow. But, you know, I think for the people of Chicago, we cannot allow the president, and I know this is difficult,
yeah,
but we cannot allow the president to provoke us into behaving outside of peaceful protest. Because, again, the pretext to the federal troops has always been to send the National Guard. But the National Guard really is a prelude to what he ultimately wants,
yeah,
which is to send the military into American cities.
So one of the things that you said, you know, with your executive order on ICE-free zones, you said the city will provide official signage to private landowners and leaseholders who want to bar ICE from their property. Does that make them now a target, Mayor? I mean, how would the city step up then if those private individuals did find themselves kind of in the crosshairs of the federal government in some way?
We already are. They already are in the crosshairs. I mean, this is not something that I came up with on my own. I mean, we know we have to protect the public assets of our city. And it was business communities and community partners and leaders who said, Mayor, you know, we want to join in on this. Here's the thing. As much as I know that there is a level of anxiety and fear that exists, there are people who are pushing beyond their fears and showing up in some of the most courageous ways. And again, the rapid response teams, I cannot thank them enough. And they're Northwest and Southwest and Southeast and really all over the city of Chicago defending our fundamental rights here in our city. And because we are living in unprecedented times, if we're going to, I think it's incumbent upon Chicago to begin to set the standard of what resistance looks like. Right now, I know that there are mayors around the country who, I mean, we look to each other. I mean, I had a conversation with Mayor Wilson of Portland just the other day ago. I talked with Mayor Bass and Mayor Bibb from Cleveland, you know, sent me a text, Mayor Brandon Scott. I mean, we're all having regular conversations with the U.S. Conference of Mayors, the African American Mayors Association.
What's the question that's swirling among?
Basically, how do we take the examples that we have across this country, find a unified space that we can share these ideas, and then begin to spread them out? There are mayors across the country that are looking at, you know, executive orders that we've put forward. I mean, you know, if you think about the second executive order that I signed was around how law enforcement should show up in our communities. They shouldn't have masks. They should be able to be identifiable, badge numbers, body cams. It's a law that Governor Newsom passed in California, right? And so look, there's no perfect answer in this moment. But one thing that I know for sure, the main answer is we have to resist and defend.
Let's hear from Evelyn on the north side. Hey, Evelyn, good morning. What's your question for the mayor?
Good morning. Thank you. And thank you for talking with us, Mr. Mayor.
You're welcome.
What I would like to know is specifically what powers of the mayor's office in the city you can use to defend the people of Chicago against the assaults and abductions by CBT and ICE. You called for an investigation, but who's doing it? Are you opening an investigation? You talked about resistance, but what specific police powers can you initiate to intervene? Those are difficult questions. The answer may be none, but I think we'd love to know.
Yeah. Well, this goes back to our conversation at the very beginning of the show. In terms of our ability to make sure that the federal government doesn't interrupt our fundamental right to protest, I do have executive authority to make sure that our police officers protect the fundamental right to protest, right? We're seeing in cities across America where that has not been the case, right? And so that's one area that I know for sure that the president is desperately trying to undermine.
But I mean, Superintendent Snelling has said, you know, it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't type of situation when it comes to trying to protect folks. Because, you know, police are following the city's welcoming ordinance, according to Snelling, by not assisting the feds. Some residents, though, are saying, and I think folks like Evelyn are saying, police are not doing enough to protect the protesters and protect the people of Chicago. So what can police do differently? And what power do you have to have them do things a little differently? Because it's not quite working.
Our fundamental right to protest has not been interrupted. So that part is working, right? It would be different if the people in Chicago were not being able to peacefully assemble and push back against the federal government. So it is working. The Know Your Rights, and just bear with me for a second, because I know people want an absolute answer in terms of stop the president of the United States of America. I just want to make sure that we're clear about this. The framers established a constitution where there would be checks and balances so that Congress and the Supreme Court would do just that. Never in the history of America has a mayor or cities been asked to defend our democracy from a local space. Right? These are unprecedented times. And so I think Evelyn's question is right on, because look, a mayor has never been asked to defend the city from a federal invasion.
Even
right?
The police also need defense, because right. There have been instances where federal agents have thrown these chemical irritants.
Absolutely.
And the cops are getting out of the way to protect themselves too.
Yes. And so that's why what we are doing, we're using the tools that are available to us. So I want to just make sure I slow down and walk people through this. The executive order to ensure that people know their rights, that is one action that we were able to put forward so strong that Tom Homans, when remember when these raids first started back in the winter?
Yes.
Tom Homans said the people of Chicago are too educated because he could not get the so-called numbers that they were trying to get. And so these executive orders to make sure that sister agencies, city departments are not cooperating with these federal so-called immigration enforcement without a criminal warrant, right? That's a fundamental protection that we have that every city doesn't have. The reason why he's attacking our city is because we actually do have these rights. And then finally, the third one. Because these are unprecedented times, at the very least, I know that as mayor, Evelyn, I oversee these public spaces so I can establish parameters around public spaces. Now, in terms of if you're asking what else can we do, it's going to take everyone and all of us. I know people are looking to me and I'm proud to stand up and defend this city. And I'm also saying we have to go to the courts. We have to use executive authority that I think most people never even thought about what executive authorities that a mayor does have. And I'm executing that using legislation, but we also have to organize in the streets across America. We have to challenge this Congress. We have to challenge the Supreme Court. We have to challenge the politics of today to ensure that the Trump administration's goal to defund our education system, to take away our resources for our public transportation system, defunding our healthcare system, firing Black women across the country, where the greatest, the subgroup that has been hit the hardest because of the Trump's cuts have been Black women. It's going to take all of us, and I'm using every single tool that's available to me. And here's the harsh reality. We don't know what our limits are just yet. And I'm going to test the boundaries as much as I possibly can to do everything in my power to defend the people of this city.
Let's hear from Cotto in Little Village. Hi, welcome to the show, and what's your question for the mayor?
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm wondering whether the CPD is being trained on the extent to which they intervene, not just in protest, but generally speaking, like, can we call on them to protect us from ICE?
So the police department's responsibility is to make sure that if there is an ICE immigration enforcement effort, that our police department will not interfere with that enforcement. They won't, but they also.
So residents can't call police for help in that situation.
I want to just make sure I get the full breadth of it. There's two parts to it. They cannot interfere with immigration enforcement, but they also do not help and assist in enforcement. I want to make sure that those are clear distinctions because that is helping. The president wants local law enforcement to dub as federal agents and do the job of the federal government. We don't do that here in Chicago. As far as protection from ICE in and of itself, that is not the role of the police department. That is not the role. Their role is to make sure that if people decide to show up and protest these interactions, that they protect the people's rights to protest. Here's the bottom line in America. Deportations have been happening for a very long time. We know that from both political parties. Deportation is not a new phenomenon, right? What's different in this instance is that this president has used the office of the president to go beyond the constitutional parameters. And what we have called for repeatedly is for the courts to provide real check and balance to what he's doing. And here's the thing, you all, and I've said this before, the unprecedented moment that we're in is going to require dramatic and organized resistance. And I'm going to use everything in my power to protect the people of Chicago. And the harsh reality is we have an unhinged, unstable, double-minded individual in the White House who is hell-bent on destroying this Constitution, destroying this democracy, and undermining our humanity.
Hey, Matt, what's your question?
Good morning, Mayor. First of all, I just want to thank you for all you've done so far in the first couple of years on really pushing to pass people's budget priorities around reopening clinics and fully funding schools. I'm curious, I know this is a tough budget year, and, you know, as a CPS parent and a husband of a CPS teacher and an LSE member, I'm curious in particular, we've seen, you know, you've been talking about ICE in this moment in particular, just what a bedrock of our communities, our schools are. There's so much great rapid response work and other things happening anchored in these schools. And yet I know that it's really tough in this climate with the cuts coming down from the federal government to fully fund them. And so my question is about the state piece of this. I know the state has chronically underfunded our Chicago schools. The inequities are just glaring. The state, I think, has acknowledged it at different moments. And I'm just curious where the discussions are on getting them to ante up and fully fund our schools, you know, and Trump-proof our schools, if you will.
Let me get you an answer for that question. Good question, Matt.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Matt. And I believe you said his partner is a public school teacher. So God bless your partner and you and your family. Yeah, look, I've had conversations with the governor, with both leaders of both chambers, the Senate president, as well as the Speaker of the House, and as well as their various caucus members. I believe this Springfield knows they have to do more. And in fact, the city, not just the city, but the state of Illinois, there was a survey taken that over 70% of the people of the state want our public education to be funded and to be funded better. And, you know, there's a funding formula that was passed, and now we actually have to ensure that that funding formula is carried out. And so we'll have some activity during the fall veto session. There are some ways in which we can push for greater resources in our special education, our transportation for our public education system, as well as bilingual education. But the real big thing that we have to do in Springfield is we have to challenge the ultra-rich to pay their fair share. We have to have progressive revenue. I know that there's an appetite to do that because, look, if we're going to defend our state and our city from Trump's cuts, as well as his, you know, investment into the ultra rich, the state of Illinois has to show up. And I'm going to present my budget next week. And
you are.
I'm going to challenge the people of this city to ensure that our budget is not balanced off the backs of working people.
When you say things like, you know, challenging the ultra rich to pay their fair share in taxes, what could that look like? Mm-hmm. Could that be, you know, maybe a corporate head tax that charges businesses per employee?
I mean, I think that there are a number of things, and I'll release that report next week.
Get a preview here on In the Loop?
Well, I will say this. I know that our corporations, and they've said this, that their number one priority is safety. And we have led, you know, at a critical time in our nation's history, some of the greatest declines in violent crime and homicides and shootings and shooting victims. And that's important for the overall economy. When people are safe and they feel safe, it improves our economy, right? So I believe that there are some opportunities for us to make critical investments by challenging our larger corporations and the ultra rich who just received a tax cut from Donald Trump, right? So they're already getting a tax cut from the federal government. As a local government and as state government, we do have to challenge those with means, excuse me, to put more skin in the game.
Yeah. So in the middle of all of this, it's day 8 of the federal government shutdown. Mm-hmm. We are starting to see the effects here. Federal workers furloughed, working without pay even. We saw a ground delay at O'Hare due to a staffing shortage. And as the shutdown went into effect, the Trump administration put a hold on $2.1 billion in infrastructure funds for this city. A large chunk of that money, we know, would be used to extend the red line from 95th to 130th Street. This thing's been in works for decades, Mayor Johnson. So, I mean, what are you doing to get that money released?
Yeah, so I'm glad you lifted up the fact that we have been working on this for decades, right? We have been calling for the extension of the red line for at least 50 years. And we got that done under my administration. And as the president is sending billions of dollars overseas, you know, our families on the south and west sides of Chicago have gotten nothing, right? And so, you know, our corporate counsel has done an incredible job, and our legal team putting forth, you know, these lawsuits and calling for these injunctions. That's just one way in which, you know, we have to fight this administration. We have to take them to the courts, right? And, you know, as difficult as this time has been, I will say this to all the residents. We have to hold on and hold on together. This is not a time for us to turn on one another. This is the time where we turn towards one another to continue to ensure that our immigrant community, communities, our you know, Black communities that have been historically disinvested in, that we remain firm in building a city that works for everyone. So,
what do you think about this being framed as so-called race-based contracting? Yeah. Right, that's the reasoning they're giving for pausing this funding.
Well, look, I don't think it's unfair for the people in the communities who have been disinvested in. I don't think it's unfair for them to be able to participate in the development of their own communities. I believe that's only right.
Yeah, I want to be clear. He's referring to, let's just say White House Budget Director Russ Vogt, who said this, is referring to the fact that the Red Line project has a certain percentage of contracts going to minority businesses. So they say that this is race-based contracting and they want no part. Right.
No, this is not. This is about making sure that the people in the community get to participate in the development, right? And he's doing the same thing in Atlanta. I talked to my colleague there, Andre Dickens, who, you know, is someone who has worked hard to make sure that, you know, that there's an equitable distribution of resources. And it, again, it further exposes the fact that the president is not interested in building an economy that works for everyone. The hyper-concentration of wealth that has been shifted into the hands of the ultra-rich, that's what this president is focused in on. The fact that Tom Homan is under investigation right now for taking a bribe to steer contracts towards corporations who got a tax break and who are also contributors to his campaign. This is the most corrupt government and administration that we have than we have seen in modern history. But again, I'm going to remain firm. We're going to use every single tool, whether it's to the courts and whether it's through executive orders, you know, collaborating with other cities and states around the country as we sign on to, as we call amicus briefs, where we sign on to other affirmative litigation to show the strength across this country. We're not just leading, we're also supporting. And the business community, the faith community, our community-based organizations, government, we're all in alignment in this moment.
Let's hear from Sherry on the near north side. Hi, Sherry. What's your question for Mayor Johnson?
Good morning, and thank you for taking our calls, Mayor Johnson. I belong to a group of women of a certain age. There are about 15 of us. We call ourselves the Resistor Sisters. We go out and march at the various events that are happening and have been happening over the last 2 months. On Sunday, five of us went to Millennium Park. We were wearing signs around our necks. No four-letter words. We were not chanting. We were just walking. I think it's called a micro-protest. We were confronted by one security guard who told us we would have to leave because it was illegal to protest in the park. This is Millennium Park. We asked why, you know, this was so, because we were just engaging in free speech conduct. We were told that the park was owned by Governor Pritzker, and it was private property, and we had to leave. This was two security guards who were saying the same thing, so it was not just one security guard who was misinformed, but we were escorted out of the park.
Okay, we're almost out of time, Sherry, and I want to get you an answer. Sure, What's your direct question for the mayor?
Okay, the question is, will you advise whoever is in charge of cultural affairs to adjust this situation and better inform the security staff?
I most certainly will look into this, Mary. I will.
Thank you, Sherry. So we talked about we don't have enough time to get deeper into the budget. Obviously, that's happening. We're about, what, a week away from you introducing?
A week away, yep.
Because we're facing a huge budget hole, $1.15 billion. You've said no increase on property taxes, though, right?
That is correct.
And do you think you can stick with that?
I will.
How much longer?
I mean, look, there are at least 129,000 millionaires in the city of Chicago. At least 25 billionaires. And the fact that working people have a harsher tax burden than the ultra rich, that's an unfair system. And so this is why, whether it's the fall veto session or going into the spring session,
yeah,
we have to challenge the state of Illinois to pass progressive revenue.
That's Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson. Thank you so much for making time.
You're welcome.
Appreciate you. I'll see you next month when I'm sure we can talk a lot more about Chicago's budget.
You got it.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Dan Tucker, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. And thanks for listening.